I think this will stand as my favourite text of the morning, regardless of how well you go from here. In shock, just did ladder predictor. So you sort of had me at hello. You've done the ladder predictor after round 9. Salute. Have Saints and Blues in top 4, plus Gold Coast 6th. Cats and Dogs miss out. And then there's quite the emoji in the aftermath. Well done doing the ladder predictor after round 9. The search for meaning in all of it. David King, welcome to the Means Test.
Morning, G. If I gave you the ladder predictor of the first 9 rounds, I reckon you'd get it wrong. If you had to sit down and start again.
Yeah, did they really beat them?
No, that didn't happen, did it?
What's your King's Gambit? What's your opening declaration?
I think the more we watch them, the more we just reaffirm that these sides are good in areas that they're good at. We've talked about them all year. If you want to use an analogy, if it was a one-day cricket game, we now move into the phase where it's, say, the 20-over mark. You bring on your spinners.
Oh, the milking overs.
The milking overs. And from the 20-over mark to the 40-over mark, you just rotate the strike, Jared, build the score, and then unleash late. So the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks becomes a bit of a holding pattern, I think. We know what we know about these teams now. So you look at that Geelong and St Kilda game as an example, and we'll go deeper into it later on. If you can do this against Geelong, you can get them, but it's hard to do against them. And conversely, Geelong know how to get the Saints. If you can do this against the Saints, you get them. So everyone's got a flaw, everyone's got a weakness, an avenue. Some are greater than others, but we know them now. I think after 8-9 weeks, you get a really good handle, a really good body of work to sit back and assess. And I think that's where we are right now.
Right. The big issue is clearly Essendon turning in that performance on Saturday night, and the level of discontent in their community, the despondency that set in watching that game. That was a terrible performance, just as a neutral observer. And to come a week after the spiritually uplifting moment, the question for them was, what would it amount to? And it amounted to nothing.
They've become a hard watch, haven't they? Like, I don't know what's happened at Essendon, because it was only about 3 years ago I thought they had the list to win a flag, 3-4 years ago. And then their list has potentially got better since then. I know they lost Danaher, which was a big, big loss for the structure of that side. And if he's there, does he win your games? He probably does. But the talent they had come in over the last 2 to 3 years, high-end draft selections, young kids that are going to be stars, and still there performing, you know, Perkins and Hobbs and Reed, these guys. I don't know what's happened. I really don't. And all you can do is, I think they live a lie a little bit, the Bombers. I don't know if their leaders are absolutely honest with the group. It's a warm and fuzzy environment out there internally, and sometimes warm and fuzzy doesn't really thrash out the problems, you know. Everyone sort of talks about, you know, it's a real positive, and it's not about the smiling and laughing at training. It's not. I'm with Dyson Heppel on that. You've got to be able to get over the loss. You can't carry a loss for 5 days. That's unhealthy. But you've got to be able to walk up to someone and say, hey, listen, if you keep doing that, you're out of the team. Simple, hard, cold facts. They had an opportunity to correct and maintain selection integrity a few weeks ago when they dropped Dylan Shield, made a big song and dance about it, and brought him back into the team, made him sub. We don't like what you're doing. We got standards here. Oh, hang on, but you're in our best 23. So if someone gets injured, you come on and we like your standards then. You either make the statement or you don't. They watered it down. And I think that's now, it's got a bit of a lag on the group. Let's start with the captain. Is he in their best halfback group? Like, does he have a role in the team at the moment? Like, and Jack Zeeble's in the same conversation. And it's difficult when your captain is not in great form and doesn't really, I mean, where does he sit in terms of the halfback flankers in the competition right now? Would you have him in the top 10 halfback flankers? Probably not. Definitely not. Would you have him in the top 20? Probably not. So he's not damaging by foot. He can't stop a man. He's getting his positioning wrong regularly, and being made look second rate because the ball movement's coming so fast and the midfield not putting any pressure on. Everything is working against him. So I think, well, gee, that's an awkward situation. So how honest are they internally? What does Ben Rutten say to Dyson Heppel? mate, we, you know, do they move him to the wing? Do they reset him in the midfield? Do they say, gee, we don't know where you are, mate? And I know it's his 200th game on the weekend. We were never going to do this prior to his 200th, but let's call a spade a spade. What is his best position for Essendon right now? No one's got the answer. Mm. But they're the sort of conversations you need to have. And I said the same thing about Jack Zee. Well, Jack Zee will be getting a game at any of the top eight teams, any of them. And where would he be playing? Because he went forward 5 weeks ago against the Swans and kicked 5 goals. But they said he could no longer be a forward at the start of the year, or the start of last year when he went back. So now they return back to something they know is probably not going to work long term, and now you're stuck. What do you do now? Move him down back again? Hardly influencing games. So when your captain is not influencing, you're in a world of pain. That's the truth.
Yep.
But are they honest enough at Essendon to sit down and talk facts and sense and have those hard conversations? I don't think they are.
Do they lack any air of ruthlessness? Do you buy into that part of the conversation?
You know what? I reckon what Matthew Lloyd said on Sunday on the Footy Show was as good as I've heard for a long time. And he said it with passion, and he was challenged on what he said. And I sat back and thought, that is 100% right. They needed a statement. They needed someone to make a statement. They've needed someone to make a statement for 9 weeks. The coach tried to do it but watered it down. No one did it in game when they were challenged physically and Merritt was bowled over. Dylan Shiel accepted what Luke Parker said to him and did to him and belittled him really in the football world. Luke Parker knew what he was doing. Do you reckon Luke Parker thinks for a moment that's not going to be shown on national television for all of us to talk about? After, 10 years in the game? He knows where the cameras are. That was his little statement. And they accepted it. They wore it. No one made a statement. So I agree with Matthew Lloyd.
Yeah, I was the same, I must confess. I'm probably not drawn to that normally. But when he said it, I thought, yeah, actually, that's really hard to disagree with.
Put yourself in that position,
and
Jerry.
Coming from a true Essendon place. So I thought that he was able to morph himself into that.
Yeah.
He's lived probably these moments. Yeah, I was with you on that.
So you be Dyson. I keep saying Dyson. You be Dylan Shiel for a moment and have that player basically putting you on the radar for the world to look at and to critique. So when that comes, everyone says, oh, did he duck his head? Where did he duck? Let's go back and have a look at the vision. Let's find that moment where he ducked his head. He must have ducked his head. And we all did it. We all went looking, and you couldn't find it anywhere. So it was a great stooge by Luke Parker, and it got the response. It definitely did. But Dylan Shiel would have felt one out. Not one person come to help. No one flew the flag for their own. I found that really weird.
Yep.
Wouldn't happen to the good teams. No way. You go after Petrarca, you got Gawn and Oliver and Viney coming at you. You go after Cam Rayner, you have the whole world come at you from the Brisbane Lions point of view. Wouldn't happen.
So what do you think the path for them is? So they're 2-7. They look utterly cast. They've got this really strange set of feature games coming up, which is almost a disaster for them. Like, to be thrust into centre stage soon enough on Friday nights is if they're still failing in such a way, like they're not hiding anyway, but when you get thrust into that environment, that the scrutiny is going to be utterly ferocious from here on, like it is now, and rightfully so. I agree with that, rightfully so. But it's only likely to get more intense.
So do you think that's a bad thing?
It's a bad thing if they can't. So they look lost. They got the circuit breaker response on which to build, and then they went back to being, that's their worst performance of the year. And they've had some signature horror performances. That was the worst of them coming right off that. So that worries me enormously. Mm. So you talk about living a lie. Okay, so we put everything into the game before, and they get the alibis, they get the right team at the right time. Hawthorn aren't running the game out. all over the top. You say all the right things. You look like you've made, and then it's gone. Like there wasn't a remnant of the previous Saturday night to the next Saturday night. That's troubling.
Yeah. And last week, so let's not confuse this. Last week we were proud of the way that Ben Rutten coached and said, no, we're not going to just stack the back line. We're going to stick true to our offense and we're going to attack and we're going to run and gun and all those things that we wanted to see from them this year, they reverted back to, or they made change. So now where do you go to is the tough point. I think you've got to start, and again, they've lost selection integrity. That's gone. So let's not talk about dropping players and doing that sort of stuff, because that they've lost that lever, okay? They've lost the shock factor to the group with that. So I think you've got to prioritise your positions. So don't reward guys that are not prepared to two-way run and put pressure on with midfield minutes and go past them. So if McGrath is not prepared to run a gun, will you play halfback flank? You're not ready to be a midfielder for us. If Darcy Parrish doesn't want to tackle and wants to run around and get 40, not for us. You go to a half forward flank and get them out of those roles before the younger players see that as the way forward. Hobbs is watching everything they're doing. Perkins is watching everything these guys are doing. So you have to stop this bleeding into the next group. Otherwise, you've got another decade of this. And the ultimate circuit breaker is to change the message, to change the man at the top. And we're not into that. We're not cheering for that. You said last week he's got to get the job right rather than fight for his job. I agree with that. So I think the only way to do that is to prioritise positions on the ground and reward those that are prepared to play the right way for this coach.
They are the big issue, the Bombers. There's a lot of thoughts around them. I'll share those as we work our way through the means test. We've got the pressure index, the best bits, the worst bits, the debate, preliminary final integrity. We'll zero in on St Kilda and Geelong because it was such an interesting case study. The Suns are the curiosity. What becomes of the Suns? Oh. Is this the rise? We'll ponder that with David King on this means test.
Doherty in some space, can run to the front edge of the square, pulls the trigger, Doherty! Good night, Giants. All the best, Leon. You deserve better than this today. They get to Doherty, and why wouldn't you? The most inspiring story of the year is that man, and he has pulled out a one wood we didn't know he had and plonked it right down the middle of the fairway from, I'm going to say, 60 metres.
So I think that was the best moment of the weekend for me. The goal, and we know what it represents, but Charlie Curnow, not just that he was the first to Doherty, but he ended up falling over. So exuberant were they in the celebration. Charlie Curnow's on the ground in the aftermath. Fantastic.
It's just a great environment at the moment, isn't it? When you're winning games of football and everything's working, the little emotional hooks that really get us all going are, yeah, there, you know, to see him a couple of weeks back with Ben Cunnington was a real tug at the heart. And then to see him playing good football.
Yeah.
Well, he's playing some good football. Like that's a leader that we should be talking about. Follow me. You know, I'm not the best player here out on the ground, but I'm going to give you everything I've got. He did flush that. He did flush that.
Yeah, did he all too. And I think the worst bit, so if you haven't seen Liam Ryan's hit on Jake Bowie, this is the exact action. So Bowie, head over the ball. Liam Ryan, no regard for Bowie whatsoever, bumps him in the head. Has to be multiple weeks. That's an awful action from Ryan.
Pass the footy by a metre. These guys know exactly where the football's going to be when they arrive. He steps past the football to hit this guy in the head. It's as simple as that. And we'll talk about this again next week, Jared, because you know what? We're not changing behaviour.
Totally avoidable. There have been some that have been borderline in recent times. This is cut and dry, multiple weeks required for Liam Ryan. We're in the means test with David King.
Cloudy in Melbourne today, a top of 18 degrees and low of 12 degrees overnight. More cloud expected tomorrow, a top of 16 degrees and possible showers on Wednesday, reaching a top of 18 again. And the Run Home with Andy Marr and Andrew Gaze is back this afternoon from 3 on SEN.
Red Energy, most satisfied customers 12 years in a row. Maybe it's time you called Red Energy on 131 806.
Introducing Hyundai Staria Load, the only van with ANCAP 5-star and Platinum safety rating.
This is your town. This is your station. This is Waitley.
Our Monday means test for round 9. David King is in place. We've got a lot to work through. Let's do preliminary final integrity. We're going to promote it up the order because the St Kilda Geelong game was so good and is so rich with the source material here.
This was a cracking game. And everyone will want to talk Geelong down because they lost and St Kilda up because they won. Let's just share it. Let's just split it. Let's just say that forget the winning and the losing for a sec and just look at the game. St Kilda were able to break down Geelong in a short space of time, call it 30% of the game. And in that 30%, they smashed them. They got it all on the scoreboard. Well done. They bypassed the intercept players. They played with dare. They carried the ball a bit deeper. They made speed an issue for the Cats. And that's as soon as you can do that, leg speed I'm talking about, not ball speed, leg speed, then you get them, okay? Geelong know all this. They know all that. They know they haven't recruited speed and they haven't got speed. But if they are able to play their set solid defence and get enough ball clearance and enough tough footy and keep the game in traffic, then they get you. And they probably had the Saints for 70% of that game. But they end up getting rolled. It's a 10-point margin. So I think both coaches walk away and go, okay, that's all right. Chris Scott's not distraught about what happened on the weekend. But I think for the Saints, it has a bigger purpose because now I think Brett Ratten can walk in and say, hey, we can beat anyone. I think the Cats, they are the gatekeepers to the top four.
Yeah, so for me, they're the bellwether seat. If you're moving in, you got to be winning the Geelong battle. So you think they're the gatekeeper.
Yeah, so if you can get past Geelong, you can make your way in the top four. I think they'll finish 4th, 5th or 6th Geelong. I think they're a seriously good team that have got strike power. And I personally don't think Chris Scott's too concerned where they finish in the 8 as long as they're in the 8 and healthy. That's all they're worried about this year. They've done the other path of trying to finish top and try and run the table and see where it takes you, and it hasn't worked. So I think that they've loaded up to be more offensively geared, more daring. There's a different level of risk now with the Cats. And there's some teething issues along the way. So I think this next, even though we're saying it's they've brought the spinners on, it's over 25, Jared, or over 20's just started, that this next 6 to 8 weeks is still important for them to grow and learn a bit more about each other. They've got a back line that's mixed up. It's a different sort of back line at the moment. And again, they're doing some different things. So I thought it was a really good game. The thing that really hit me with the Saints is their ability to adapt and play a more aggressive game as a one-off type performance against the Cats to carry and run the ball. And it was different players. I haven't seen Jones play with that sort of composure. He's a bit of a blaster. It's all quick. Saw Gresham just toy with them at times. And then you see the team first stuff. And we talked a couple of weeks ago about Brad Hill running back to block Max King's man and allowing him a clean jump at the ball. Well, I saw Jones do it as well. And I thought, wow, they're all invested in someone else. I think that's a great sign that you're on the same page as a group, and that if Max gets a goal, we get a goal. It's not I need to get a goal. So I think there's a lot to like about what the Saints did and what the Saints are doing, but I'm certainly not pouring cold water on the Cats.
I thought the most significant player, so I went back and watched the 20 minutes again to try to understand what had happened. I thought the most significant player was Seb Ross in that period of time. So there was great stuff happening in the ruck and they were sound down back and good up front. Just Ross's explosiveness when he got the footy exposed a few and on numerous occasions in that sweep set them up.
Yeah, a lot of their scoring come from stoppage. So he's their ability to hit to advantage and then exit pure was a feature, no doubt. But from that moment onwards, that you've got to make sure you don't turn the ball over. So it'll read as scores from stoppage, right? It'll read as damage from stoppage. And this is where numbers can lie to you. Because normally that next possession is under pressure and then turns over, Cats win it back, and then Cats score from turnover. Despite the fact you've won the clearance, they score from turnover. Well, they didn't do that. So when you read it, it reads Cats 60 points to 30 from stoppage. You go, oh, they must have just hit, you know, been pure and just got it on the scoreboard, perfect plays. But when you look deeper into it and you go into Geelong only scoring 37 points from turnover, you say, well, they didn't give it back to them. And that's the key with Geelong. We've seen many different approaches. We've seen the chip mark, build the ball slowly, which was a little bit of a little bit boring, a little bit tedious, and it gave them more time to set up. So you see Stewart behind the ball, you see Duncan behind the ball, you see Blitzarves rolling back, you see the Ruckman down the line. They didn't do that. So I think there's a level of maturity about this win that says we're just not giving the ball back. So don't just fall into the stoppage numbers. It's about denying the Cats what they want. It was a great win.
Preliminary final integrity. We run that over St Kilda and Geelong. The curiosity is really obviously Gold Coast, I think. So at 2-5, they were more than precariously placed. And Stuart Dew's job is being talked about as being in somebody else's hands. These two wins back-to-back for what they represent, for the quality opposition, for the manner that they were done, are the two most significant wins of Stuart Dew's coaching tenure. It gives them 4-5 with this delicious match coming against the Bulldogs in Ballarat. And then they've got top-end games against Hawthorn and North Melbourne. The top six as it stands now, they only have one match against that top six for the rest of the year. That's the Lions and the return bout. They have to have their best season. 10-12 is the marker that Guy McKenna set and got sacked on the back of it. They have to have that season minimum. And now Stuart Dew has opened that possibility up.
They have to have it minimum. When you say they have to have it minimum, what for Stuart to keep his job?
Yep.
Right.
If they're not getting to 10-12, he won't get the new contract. Progress represents 10-12, 11-11, 12-10.
Yeah.
And he's given himself that chance now from 2-5.
Right. You might be right. So I see it a little bit different. Okay, so I think the winning comes last. The actual winning of games is the last thing you see. It always represents in percentage. It always represents how competitive you've been and whether you're improving as a group or not. And then you see which talent you're doing it with. You can throw a whole heap of old guys in there and improve your percentage, but it really doesn't take you anywhere. They're doing that with younger guys. So I can see a way where he keeps his job if they build to 95 percentage points up from where they've been over the last 2 or 3 years. And I'm not really worried about how many wins that is. I think he's doing a great job. We've talked a lot about Stuart Dew.
The 2-5 was a better 2-5 than it had been previously. It's just that the maths were awful.
They were.
But you Sydney can see it, and Sydney, excellent strategically, made progress. And then a wet weather that required ferocious commitments against the hot team of the comp bar Melbourne. Those are excellent back-to-back wins.
Yeah, and I think their leaders have been undersold. Jared Witts is having a big year, big impact, playing like a big man. We've talked about him last week. Tuke Miller, everyone's talked about over the last couple of seasons. He's gone to the next level again. He's actually bringing damage to his game now. A few weeks ago I said, I'm not sure where, he's getting 35 touches and 4 score involvements. Like, what's that? And you see him on the weekend and it's a different version of him. Isaac Rankin now, Isaac Rankin had 11 score involvements. They only scored 19 times. He was involved in 11 of them. Like, he was everywhere. It wasn't brilliant play. It was just pressure. And I just said it was the best small forward pressure game I've seen for the year. And there's some benchmarks out there. We talk a lot about Cozzy Pickett. We talk a lot about what Morris Rioli's doing at the moment at the Tigers. So to see him just set that stand, I thought, wow, the penny's dropped for this guy. It's not about getting disposals as such. And the players they brought in, like Marby or Chol, has slotted in perfectly up there. He kicked 4 goals. And they were 4 crumbing-type secondary opportunity goals. They weren't the pack marks. Kaz Bolt's playing a role. They're doing all this without Ben King. So I think he's doing a really solid job, Stuart Dew. And I would be – and everyone says, oh, throw Clarkson and it'll do this and it'll do that. No one's invested in the playing group like Stuart Dew has. They have a great relationship with their senior coach up there. So personally, I wouldn't be rocking the boat. I'd just be rolling on and continue to improve and continue to drive the standards. Matt Rowell, I don't know whether you've seen the Matt Rowell versus Caleb Sarong 50-50 ball in the middle of the ground, game in the balance. And Matt Rowell has to make probably 12 metres to get to the ball, and Caleb Sarong probably has to make 8. Matt Rao makes the 12 before Caleb decides to make the 8. Now, it's not a go at Sarong. It's just the mindset of this kid. No easy balls in his game. He's 90% contested footy. He went and got that ball, squirted it out, ball went forward. David Swallow said, well, that's a standard. I better go here as well. Crashes the pack, ball spills, goal. And I thought that will be shown on their review tape 5 times today. This is us. This is why teams don't want to come to Metricon and play us. It's always a wet weather game up there. So I think they've got a home ground advantage that'll take them potentially to the final. I hope they make finals, but I'm not consumed by that. Let's just keep them improving.
Anything come off Fremantle, or were they due that performance? So they were going for 7 in a row. I think other than Melbourne, 5 in a row is going to be a big moment for any team. They'd ticked through a lot. Any gloss come off?
No, and Fremantle supporters are hard on me for being hard on them. Okay, and the reason why I am, Jared, is I'm not a believer in saving your defensive numbers by maintaining possession. And that's how they play. They chip the ball around down back, really safe, get centre forward, play, then hit power band, play with speed, get the ball in the forward line. But fundamentally, I don't think that works in finals. Now, it may go on and work, and good luck to you, okay? But I don't think defending with the ball works. They've stacked a lot of wins this year. I think the health and safety protocols have a lag period. These guys, they had half a dozen guys return to the team. They're not their best version of themselves this week. They've gone halfway across the country to play in a 35-degree, 100% humidity clash at Metricon. And it all got on top of them. And they had the loss they're probably likely to have in this period. Not rocked by it, but I'm not in love with the way they play. And that's just a personal thing, and you can hate me for that. But I think they're going really well. They're developing really well with some young players. But right now, they're a fraction off the top 2 or 3, in my opinion. But we'll wait and see.
We're running our Monday means test. We'll debate the significance of yesterday for Carlton and for the Giants for what comes next. So for Carlton, Michael Voss was unequivocal. You heard him with Gary and Bucks this morning. That was a really significant moment, particularly to come out and not only douse the fire, but bring their own fire. And then they closed out the game really well. And everybody had their moments. The first game without Harry Mackay offered no problems to them. And for the Giants, so today is day one of the next phase. It's a phase that lasts the rest of this home and away before they reset entirely for next year. We'll debate that next with David King on the Monday Means Test.
It's disappointing, and I said to our players afterwards, I said, look, it's a really disappointing way to finish. You can ramble on about it, you can see it in their eyes, but I just said, don't be despondent. You know, clearly the club's, had a couple of losses that we, are not proud of, but that's what builds footy clubs. I've been there and done. We've been some tougher times before, and so they'll come out the other end. They'll be fine. You know, when you try to discuss mixed emotions, you go, well, there's a disappointment because of the way we finished today. There's a disappointment because where we sit on the ladder, and ultimately the responsibility of that is with the senior coach. You know, we're 2-7, and that's not us. We haven't been there for a long time. So that hangs over your head a bit, which is part of coaching.
Leon Cameron, last day as the Giants coach yesterday. So a couple of observations, Kingy, as we enter our debate around the significance of yesterday. The first is that the last 4 days of the Giants were carried with tremendous dignity for Leon Cameron, who was all class. And the second is it is the right time. They aren't the team that they aspire to be or would purport to be. And for whatever reason, so the week before they were boring in his estimation, and this week that's just not who they are. It is the right time to see what else they can be in a season that they risk wasting, that their strategy coming in and they risk 2022 being a gap year. And you can't have a gap year, I don't think.
No, that's all those points are valid. Once you've made your call, move on. It's good for everyone. It's good for all parties. And it may be expensive and it may cost you a little bit in terms of payouts and those sorts of things, but in the end, it respects the person, the outgoing coach, more than any other method. The long goodbye doesn't work. We've said that a few times. I'm interested to see what they do now. I'm really interested to see how they play. Like, do they go back to the tsunami and just go all guns blazing, you know? There's nothing really to lose for the season. Mark McVay could show a different level of adventure with this group. They can play like that. I mean, they've got other ways to win, but they can play like that. He's not really going to be able to change structure too much because that's 100 training hours. He's just not going to have the ability to all of a sudden come up with a new defensive plan or anything like that. So it will be a pretty basic structural sort of side of the game, but I do think they could really express themselves a bit more, free them up, let them enjoy their football, you know, create a fresh environment, and who knows where it takes you. I mean, we saw this work early with Reece Shaw. When you get the keys to the city, you go in and you say, right, what are we doing here? Let's go. Let's play. Let's be tough. Let's do this. And it can really have a honeymoon period, can't it? I don't know if the honeymoon period can last 13 weeks, but it might last the first six. So I'm excited by what they can be. And I just want to see some of those players, those top liners, get back to some form. Like, the reason why Leon's walked out the door at the moment is because they've underperformed this year. They have to carry that. So there's no point, you know, hugging and kissing and carrying on last night. The reason he's leaving is because those senior players, the star factor players, have failed him this year. If they played somewhere near their best, I've got no doubt they're entrenched in the eight and charging towards another opportunity. Not the case.
The Carlton side of the coin. So there were plenty who were jittery. From the moment that happened on Thursday, this always happens to us. Yeah. There's no better way to douse that than the first 14 inside 50s and the set of girls that they came up with. You forced the Giants to play catch up, and then they were just too strong at the end. Their last quarter was excellent.
We haven't seen a start like that for a while, have we? What did they say? Was it 16 minutes that they hadn't had a disposal inside their forward half of the ground?
Yeah,
the Giants. 16 minutes. Oh, that was a remarkable start to the game. It was good to see Sam Walsh back to his best because yep. I know he's been a serviceable contributor for the previous few weeks, and I know he's had an injury impacted start to the year, but we are at round nine. It was good to see him back to his damaging best, hitting the scoreboard. He was everything for them, so let's roll on from there. It wasn't all Paddy Cripps. I mean, Cripps was still very good, but the thing that is getting lost with Carlton is not only are they brutal on the inside, their handball game now is next level. So they go from this really aggressive, strong ball winners to then they're not fleet of foot, but they find a way to get the ball into a handball chain, forward handballs, and then come out the front of traffic, and then they're really dangerous. And that's why it works forward of centre, because it's so aggressive and it's so quick. It's instant. As a defender playing against Carlton, you're looking at this wave coming out thinking, oh, what do I do here? Am I locking on one-on-one? I can't really zone. So you get one-on-ones and everyone gets their lick of the ice cream forward to centre. So it doesn't really have to rely on one target forward when they play like that. So Harry's not there at the moment. But because you're playing so fast, it's not needed. It's not exposed against the Giants because they're not that solid defensively. Against other teams, it will be exposed, and they'll lack that big body down there in the short term while Harry's out. But their handball game, they handball more than any other team in the competition. And you would never have thought that coming into this season that Vossie would turn Carlton into a handballing team. You just wouldn't have thought that.
Yep.
But it's working, and it's working big. And you know, this is what we talk about structure a lot. This is how we play. This is who we are. You do this, simple roles. You do this, you do this. And then you play my plan. That's all Vossie said to him. I still think he's 30% into his coaching with this group. So next year is the year. But how good is this year looking? You know, they're setting some standards that are going to last for some time.
He exploded the odd myth yesterday too, is the Brumbies in the ruck idea. Once Paddy Cripps was doing the ruck work.
Vossie, please.
This is a different idea.
No, don't do that. No.
So what was it? He was the third tallest on the field yesterday, and you're going to have to go into the ruck.
No, I don't like it. those ruckmen don't like people from outside their fraternity taking ruck taps.
Yep.
They tend to get very angular. A lot of knees come at awkward angles and awkward spots. And against Prusy too, that was what really scared me. So look, I don't like that idea long term, Jared. No. Don't use Patrick Cripps in that role, Vossie. Please. I hope he's come to his senses overnight. What's he doing?
It did make me
imagine
chuckle.
If he gets hurt, Jared.
Oh yeah.
Imagine if he gets a big knee to the thigh, and he's got a corky that he just can't shake for a couple of weeks. What are we saying then?
The whole thing's improvising at the moment. That was an interesting way to go. Kingy, you better mention Wietering. He was rock solid down back. To me, best on ground, Cam from Chirnside Park.
Yeah, in the votes, definitely. He's having a sneaky good year as well. I mean, it's just winning has a way of making everyone in a safe, you know, putting everyone in a safe space. Wietering doesn't feel as under pressure this year as what he did the last couple. Liam Jones, if Liam Jones was down there with him, Jared, they'd be unstoppable this year. But now there's a lot to like about what they're doing. They're ticking every box. There will be bigger challenges than the Giants coming. But right now, I slipped them into my seedings, Jared. They'll be in my four because the way they play just rips the heart out of you. Imagine if they have the full complement of midfielders go against Melbourne, that'll be brutal. I don't know when they play each other. I can't wait for that opportunity. You know, see Oliver versus Cripps and Petrarca versus who else? Walsh or even Kennedy. Kennedy's in great form.
Yeah.
George Hewitt's in great form. Viney. You know, it'll be such a that's one you just put in your calendar.
You're going to have to wait a while.
Why? When's
Round that? 21.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Pull it forward, Jerry.
Round 21.
Round 21?
Yeah. Just a quirk of the fixture.
Oh, the old quirks.
Around 22.
Around 22. Oh, we you just early. Put it, you put it back
I
a
put
week.
It back a week. Instead of bringing it forward, we've gone back a week.
Round 22.
Round 22.
Ah, well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, that's a pre-finals final, Jared, because that's a great – so the next week, Melbourne have got Brisbane in Brisbane. See, that's a tough finish to the season.
Yeah, that'll tune them up nicely.
Yeah, beautiful.
All right.
They'll be 20-0 by then.
The pressure index lived – well, North Melbourne lived their week in the pressure index. So once the talking was done, how would they perform? They got blown out in the first and the last quarters by Port Adelaide, and they competed stoically in the middle. You watched it with a couple of alumni, David King. What was the view of the North Melbourne faithful that you were polling?
I watched it with the Fridge. And Corey McKernahan, as we like to call him. And every time the Kangas kick a goal, you give Corey a high 4.5 because he doesn't really have the 5. He's got one that bends at right angles. But, it's interesting. Like, it's an interesting watch. I think in the main, the Kangaroo fans understand where they're at, but there's a level of frustration with some players and some non-contributors, some that aren't AFL standard at the moment. I think when you look at the game, every team that's in that in this stage need their leaders more than any other teams. You know, you don't have the luxury of 3 or 4 quiet weeks as a leader at the Kangaroos now. So when Jack Zeeble has that 3 or 4 quiet weeks, which he's having now, and looks like he's a player without a position all of a sudden, then the heat comes. I look at Kane Turner, you're in the leadership group for a reason. I look at Aiden Corr, same thing. And he was okay, Aiden Corr. But then there's... Then there's the system. I showed one bit of vision last night where Lockie Young chose corridor instead of boundary. He had the same free target on in both spots, but he didn't even look to the boundary. He didn't even look 50 metres down the line to the boundary. He kicked the top of the goal square effectively and chipped it straight to Sam Palpeba. Goal, soul-destroying. So when you're fighting tooth and nail just to compete and stay in the game and then one of your teammates goes corridor, gets it wrong, there's another goal. And they don't have the trust and they don't have the resolve to stay in the fight when those sorts of things happen. Younger players, it all gets too much for them, and that's when you need your leaders. And they're not quite there at the moment. They're not. So they've got some challenges. They really do. I think they've got to get some selection integrity back. R2% of Alagi, right? I think he's going to be an AFL player, but right now he's playing junior footy. It's like he's undersized in every battle he engages in. He's undersized or a little bit reluctant. So I think you've got to drop those guys. Jaden Stevenson, a little bit timid at the moment. Hey, we like you. We think you can play. And we know you're on big money and all this sort of gear. I'm not worried about that. Go back to the reserves. Run into some tackles. Make some tackles. And then we'll bring you back up. But right now, we can't accept you playing like this. You're a good player, but not on your terms, on our terms. Okay, so I think those sorts of clear boundaries have to be set. That if you're a non-competitor, you're not at AFL level. You're back at the VFL, and you bring in those that will compete. So it wasn't all doom and gloom, but again, it's another heavy loss. It's another, I just call them north of 50-point losses now.
Yeah.
And they're stacking up. So the stack's getting pretty big this year. I think that's, of the eight losses, six of north of 50 points.
Port Adelaide will be a bigger part of next week's means test. They've picked off their four wins to get to 4-5, and they get the right game at the right time, I think. They're against the gatekeeper, so Geelong in Geelong. They'll have a decision to make around Charlie Dixon, who obviously doesn't get the game in the Sandful. Will he play there? And they leave the three who are now all in good form to do it. So just as I say, they'll be a bigger part of next week's means test, but just a quick word on Port.
Good to see Ollie good to see Ollie Wines do what he did, you know, racking up plenty of possession, a lot of tough stuff. Their forward line lit up. I mean, Marshall and Georgiades, they were really good targets for them on the weekend. Yeah, there's not an area of the game that looked exposed, really, against the Kangaroos. So, again, we have to wait and see them against the big fish. But they've salvaged their season. They're back in the hunt for finals. To me, I said this when they were 0-2, and I said it again when they were 0-3 and 0-4. It'll be a long road back to finals, but when you start like that, you can't win it. You just can't win it. We've seen it before. I went through the numbers. Three teams have started like that over the last decade and won first week of finals but can't get through week two. It just becomes such a long run at it that it's almost a final every week for 10 weeks.
Yep.
Get you.
David King with the means test. So what they got right, what they got wrong coming up next, and we're on the build toward the seedings. We'll take a few calls in the means test if you've got something to add to what's been put forward or some additional elements to come. This is Waitley for Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy, and introducing Stariaload, the van that's big on safety. We're in the Monday means test with David King. I just want to put you on notice ahead of time, Kingy. The seedings have a sponsor now.
Wow, the pressure now.
So
you have to start taking this seriously.
No, I'm not going to, because I believe the sponsors come on board knowing full well what this is, and it won't. It's not going to do anything to the way I'm happy to fling them around.
Who we got?
I've got playing games and the whole lot going on.
I know. And it's usually revolved around a Friday alarm.
Yeah, so Red Energy specifically asked for the seedings.
What are they thinking
then? So you're on notice. I'm not. You are.
Is on notice. You're umpiring. That was the most insipid blowing of a whistle that's ever been recorded.
A bit timid early.
A little bit timid.
Will I confess this? The first contest, right?
Will I confess this? I like the start already.
I half blew the whistle and then called play on. It was a terrible start. And then the first holding the ball that came along, when I ran from the contest, I could hear the murmurings in the background. I got that wrong too.
I was worried. I saw the vision. I was worried about you in that green get-up. I thought gee whiz.
In the lime.
He might get arrested either way he looks.
So they got that right and they got that wrong. But I would like to ask you, are they getting this right or are they getting this wrong? That is Matthew Nix and his selection. So fitting in line with your integrity of selection, particularly the Riley O'Brien dropping for the weekend against the Lions, they get mauled in the ruck and Matthew Nix is playing the long game. Is he getting it right or getting it wrong?
Getting it 100% right.
I knew you'd say that.
Yeah. Well, what's the value of a ruck hit out? Seriously. What is the value of a hit out? There's more hits to disadvantage than there are hits to advantage.
No, you'll have the ruck union on you in no time.
Well, we're using Batty Grips in there now. Well, so let's have a closer look at the game, okay? So hit-outs, just work with me for a sec. Hit-outs, 59-34 in favour of Brisbane, and the big Oscar McInerney was everywhere. So first possession, so tapping it to a teammate, which is the skill they keep telling me. First possession, 51-41. So it goes from a 25 gap down to a 10 gap in first possession. And then that's classic Western Bulldogs. That's what they have to fight every week with a ruckman that doesn't win taps. And then track that back to effective clearances. So they know they're going to lose the tap. So that's a great starting point. You're better off knowing you're going to lose them than have the risk of winning them and the risk of losing them, because you're not sure whether you're attacking or defending. Okay? So they knew they were going to lose them. So in the end, the gap of clearance is only three. So for all the ruck dominance in the world, clearances 45-42. So I think we at times overvalue the absolute hit out. But when you talk Jared Witts, his ability to create scores in the forward 50 and the forward half of the ground is the best in the comp. That's what I'm looking at. Guys that actually create scores from their hit outs. So they drop Riley O'Brien, I think, after a few weeks of just so-so form. And the moment where I think it was Jack Silvani a couple of weeks ago moved him off the line of the ball and took a mark or was a hit out. I remember seeing it, but I can't recapture the actual event. And I reckon Matthew Nick said, nah, I can't have the boys seeing our big pillar, our big man in the ruck. Big men have got to play like big men.
Yep.
As soon as a big man plays like a small man, you're out because there's no function in the team for that. So they make the statement. They drop him. He'll come back angrier, bigger and better. He's played, you know, pretty good footy for the Adelaide Crows. I don't think he's going to be Sean Darcy. I think he's more Mark Pittenette than Sean Darcy. But Mark Pittenette's still a pretty good player.
Yep.
So he's got a function to play, but on Adelaide's terms.
All right. I got a few in the bucket if they got that right. So the Bulldogs midfield.
Oh, yeah.
First time this year, they've looked like the Bulldogs midfield.
And got still a lot of growth. Bailey Smith, I just put Chris Judd and Bailey Smith together for a couple of weeks and make him a different player. He's getting 40 touches a week and he just needs some finishing touches, some more aggression, and he'll start absolutely dominating this competition. And they're back. They're hungry again. Jackson McRae's had a fantastic year. His ability to win ball in tight and get it to the outside. Libba was back. That's Libba to me. They've mucked around with Libba all year. Half forward, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Just put him around the action. Crank him up, let him go. They're back, the Dogs midfield. And okay, people say, oh, it's one performance. You know, it was a soft kill, blah, blah, blah. You still have to see it. And the way they take it, I think it was plus 16 clearances, plus 40 contested possessions, plus 100 on the outside. So once they get to the outside, yep, they're gone. And that's them, plus 25 inside 50s. They just, you know, just keep knocking it in there and knocking it in there until they break you. And if they can play like that, they can beat anyone.
So just do that again against the Suns on Saturday, who are in good form.
That's in Ballarat.
Yeah. So I just want to... I agree. That's the first time the Dogs have looked like that this year. I just want to see them do it the second week before I give myself over entirely to the idea.
You're thinking seedings. Is that what you're going?
Well, they could be in the seedings from a low position because we know if they are going to be that team again, that's still vivid in the mind. Richmond with Dustin Martin back. So they've got these 2 weeks right. They've played two teams who reality has grabbed hold of Collingwood and Hawthorn. And I wouldn't sort of overstate what Richmond has done, except there are Dusty doing Dusty things, which the goal is brilliant. Until Sam Doherty, that was going to be the best bit of the weekend. And Shea Bolton, who it's really easy to cling your hopes to him.
What a player.
But I do want to see them against a good team where they've shown that short breaking point. So when they've been challenged by those teams this year, they've had the traits of last year. Have they shed those entirely? I don't think you know from these 2 weeks, but they have got a lot right in these 2 weeks.
Logically, Jared, they're a different team when Dusty's just out there. Everyone gets a lesser grade opponent, and you just know he's there. Like the security of having that guy somewhere on the field, if you're full forward and he's right next to you, or if you're an on-baller, you just know you've got to get the ball near him or down to him, and the game can change. I think what Bolton's doing is quite special.
Mm.
You know, everything he touches turns into a score. He is so clean. He's one touch. That ball bouncing, bobbling around, a lot of players take half a step before they try to pick the ball up, slow down, you know, and give the opposition a chance to nab them. He comes in, 100 mile an hour, woof, in and gone. Not many players can do that. So I fall in love with Richmond really easy. You fall out of love with Richmond, but you fall back in love with them pretty quick. They've got pretty much their full complement out there at the moment. So I think they've got a couple of scalps in it. It'll be a fantastic game this Saturday night. The Bombers have ran into Richmond at the wrong time.
Yes.
It's not who you play, it's when you play them, Jared.
Yep. And that Sydney's the other team. They got that opportunity right. So they knew that Essendon didn't have the core strength to match their weakness, and they did as they pleased with them. So I'm going to hold on Sydney until Friday night against Carlton. But they got that game exactly right.
Yeah, I thought Sydney's win was a bit better than that. I really thought that I've been waiting for this midfield to show us, and they don't have to show us anything, but I'm waiting for them to put a performance up in lights, that they are tough enough. Rowbottom, that's the toughest game he's played for the year. Warner, the same. Parker, when Parker's in that sort of mood, he's a top 10 player, top 5 player in our competition, but he hasn't been in that sort of mood for a while. And I talked about Warner. So there's a lot to like about Sydney and their midfield. I talked about Sweet Feet Goulden last night. When he kicks the ball, it is just pure. And their forward line works. You know, Papley back into that lineup is the energy they need. So there's a lot happening at Sydney that's really exciting. I don't know whether we're a year ahead of time for the Swans. I feel like next year was always the year they targeted. But we wait and see. They've got a couple of big scalps in them. I'm just not sure whether that's in a finals campaign or just on the way home in the home and away.
The all-important seedings coming up next to round out the round 9 means test. Every means test culminates with the seedings. For Red Energy, moving house, call local energy retailer Red Energy. I think Red Energy got the right moving. We like to fling the seedings around if you haven't always followed along. Sometimes we do that in the ad break just before we're going to commit ourselves.
I give you a prediction. Mm-hmm. Red Energy will jump off within the next 6 weeks.
I think they love the idea. Righto.
We'll start at the top.
Yeah, let's do it that way. One.
Well, let's just say Melbourne and Brisbane in that order will not move until round 15.
Yep. Until they play.
At the G, Thursday night. If Brisbane roll Melbourne, they'll replace them. And if not, that'll probably stay like that for the rest of the year.
Yep. One Melbourne, two Brisbane.
Yeah, this is the fun.
This is where it gets good.
Now, what have you done? We've got logic here. How have you done this?
So I moved Carlton in last week purely because I just love watching them so much. So they're at 4. I'm moving them to 3. I thought that was an excellent performance yesterday to stare down what was an awkward fixture. Their injury toll is clearly going to worry, and I suspect they peak at 3 and then recede. But just for the time being, I'm sitting Carlton at 3.
You're a little bit of the she loves me, she loves me not.
Yeah,
style.
Yeah.
You're up and down.
They'll get tossed out quickly enough.
The last 3 weeks they've beaten North Melbourne, Adelaide and the Giants.
Yeah, they're padding their wins.
Yes, yeah, that's one way of looking at it. The other way is you've got the opportunity the next month, Sydney, Collingwood and Essendon next 3 weeks.
So I've got Friday night against Sydney as a play-in game. Sydney are outside for me at the moment.
Okay.
Who have you got at 3?
The Saints. I think St Kilda have got some real weapons. I thought they were 2 or 3 drafts away at the start of the year. But they predicted this and now we're all seeing it. Although that was a pretty good win on the weekend and they're showing that they're team first.
Yeah, I put St Kilda at 4 for the same reason. Yeah. That's a really good win. 4 for you?
The Sydney Swans.
Yep.
I still think they're going to get tougher and maybe that's a forecast for 10 weeks' time. If they get clearance and contested possession tough, they've got the rest covered.
Yep. So Fremantle paid a big price with both of us. Out. Yep. Yep. Sit.
No, I
go sit for a bit.
Bit of tough love with Fremantle all year, really.
Our seedings, powered by Snowy Hydro. They're for Red Energy, who are powered by Snowy Hydro, a leader in renewable energy. Switch to Aussie-owned energy today. If you don't like the seedings this week, that's all right. We'll shuffle them around next week. They might be more to your liking by then.
Give me a whistle. Blow the whistle, Jared.
Round 9 Monday Means Test. David King, thank you.
Dropping the ball.